There is a verse in Deuteronomy in chapter 11. We looked at one last night, that the Lord your God cares for you in this coming year, from the beginning of the year till the end of the year, Deuteronomy 11:12. And the Lord promised them that when they went into this promised land of Canaan, in Deuteronomy 11:21, in the King James Version, it says that in this land which the Lord swore to give you, your days will be as the days of heaven upon earth. Think of that. We've got 365 days this year. And think if every one of those days are going to be like the days of heaven upon earth. That is the literal translation of that verse. Your days will be like the days of heaven upon the earth. People of earth live in an earthly way. God's will is that His people are like little pockets of heaven on this earth, here and there. So that people who look at our lives, look at our homes, and look at our church, can see something of heaven. And where it's not been like that, we have to repent, because that's not God's will. Jesus taught us to pray, "Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, and thy will be done on earth as it is done in heaven." So much of heaven in that prayer. "Our Father, who art in heaven, let your name be hallowed, and your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Let your name be respected on earth as it is in heaven. Let your will be done on earth as it is done in heaven." I mean, that itself is enough to make us repent. If in the last year we have not done His will on earth as it is done in heaven, if we have not been concerned that His name should be hallowed on earth as it is hallowed and respected in heaven. Those are the most important things, dear brothers and sisters. That's what it means to seek the kingdom of heaven first, and heaven's righteousness first. And we'll find that all these other problems we are trying to sort out will get sorted out automatically. Sicknesses will get healed. Problems will be solved. If God can only get us in this year to concentrate on heaven, where our mind is set on the things that are above and not on the things of earth. Haven't we tried long enough to sort out earth's problems by our earthly problems, with our mind set on it, trying this way, that way, the other way? And it hasn't succeeded. No. And even if it has succeeded, it's been a very poor solution that doesn't last long. Why not try another way? God's way. And what is God's way? I believe that here is something that we need to understand. We've been speaking much about the Old Covenant and the New Covenant, and I want this year for myself to be a New Covenant year, from the very first day till the last day. A New Covenant year where the Lord can bring into my life the spirit and the atmosphere of heaven. Think of that. You know, there are many perfumes. I don't know much about these things, but when I see some advertisements, there are some fantastic names they give to perfumes, and I don't know if there is a perfume called heaven. Perhaps there is. I don't know, you ladies can probably tell me. They give all types of fantastic names to perfumes nowadays. But if there's one, that's a counterfeit. Here's the real one. When the Holy Spirit can put the perfume of heaven about me, that everywhere I go, they smell it. Hey, this is something special. You know, I understand, I'm sure it's right, that there's a different type of perfume for men and different type of perfume for women. I mean, I don't know who figured this out, which smell is for women and which smell is for men. I don't have a clue. I don't use these things much, so I don't know. But there is a perfume of earth and there's a perfume of heaven. That I'll tell you, definitely. And you can smell it pretty quickly. And you don't need to have much discernment or be an expert on perfumes to know that. Jesus said to the people of his time, "You are of the earth, earthy. I'm from heaven." There is a whole way about certain people which shows that they belong to the earth. And that's the perfume they like. You don't fight with them. If a fellow you wants to use a particular perfume, go ahead. I'm not going to fight with him. But I don't want that perfume. No, thank you. You can have it as much as you like. You can have all the bottles. I'd rather have a drop of heavenly perfume. That this year, that my life at home, in the church, in my relationships with people, and the way I treat my wife and treat my children, treat my neighbors, and treat my brothers and sisters, it's going to be a perfume of heaven. And I can't produce it. You know that. The more you struggle, let's take physically. Supposing you exert yourself a lot, run and struggle. What perfume is going to come out of you? Stink. The more you struggle, the more you stink with perspiration. I hope we learn that. Spiritually also it's true. The more you struggle to be like Jesus, the more you stink. The more you try to be a blessing to others, the more you're a nuisance. People see you from a distance, "Hey, this guy's coming to be a blessing to me, let me run. This guy's coming to give me some advice, some exhortation, let me run." It's not the way, it's not by your struggle. Learn from how perspiration and sweat comes out of you and makes you stink. That the more you struggle to be heavenly, the more you struggle to be Christ-like, you'll only stink. Ask your wife, ask your husband, ask the other brothers and sisters in the church. That is the old covenant way. They struggled and struggled and struggled and stank and stank and stank. And then Jesus came from heaven and showed us another way. And that's the new covenant where He does it. We think so much of what we have to do for God, and we stink. I want to encourage you this year to think a little more. I'm not saying we don't have to do anything. The New Testament is full of exhortations, but I say that's not the foundation. Our problem is that we have put the first floor in the foundation. That's the problem. I'm not against doors and windows, ventilators. Sure. But I don't need them in the foundation. Oh no. It'll destroy my house if I put windows in the foundation. That's what I'm trying to say. I'm not saying we don't have to do anything for God. We have to do lots for God. And I want to do a lot of things for Him. But that's not my foundation. My foundation is rock solid. What God has done for me. And that's what's made my life so happy. You're always thinking of what you did for God, and that's your foundation. That's why you're so miserable. You're struggling to go up to heaven. Okay, let me show you two passages, one in Genesis and one in Revelation, and you'll see the difference very clearly. In Genesis chapter 11, We read about certain people who wanted to go to heaven. And what did they do? They said, you see, their aim was to go to heaven. Isn't that your aim too? To go to heaven? Or let's say to be heavenly minded? Or to have heaven's perfume over your life? Okay, here is one way. And that is, they said, Genesis 11 verse 4, come, let's build a city and a tower whose top will reach into heaven. And God came and brought confusion. Why did He bring confusion? Because He knew they'd never make it. I mean, they built, God didn't stop them and they laid the first layer of bricks. I think God allowed them to go a little bit and then stopped them. He said, you foolish idiots. You think you're going to reach heaven, this type of building? Where are you going to reach? 100 feet, 1,000 feet perhaps? That would be the end. Where is heaven? That's not even a millimeter in terms of reaching heaven. So He stopped them before they wasted more of their time and wasted their lives. I wish God would stop you. I wish God would stop you before you waste more of your life building this tower to reach heaven, to be more spiritual, to struggle and sweat and perspire, and not only struggle and perspire yourself. This fellow, whoever built it, Nimrod or whatever it is, made other people sweat and perspire to build this tower. And that's how it is. You make your poor wife miserable with your struggle to go to heaven. And you make other people miserable with your struggle to go to heaven. God should mercifully put an end to it, as He did there. You know what that tower was called? Babel. The beginning of Babylon. The false church. The false doctrine. The false gospel. It's a human struggle. God has put it in the first book of the Bible to show this is the essence of Babylon. When the Bible speaks about Babylon, the false church, it is this. It's a religion of human effort. A religion that where you've accomplished something, you can glory, I have done this. But then Jesus came with another message, and you go to the last book of the Bible, Revelation, and you see something else. You must put this verse in contrast with what you read in Genesis 11. And that is, you see, we're thinking of our subject, how to have our days on earth as the days of heaven upon earth. And one way to do it is by the Babylonian way, to struggle and struggle and struggle. Say, okay, I'm determined that this year my days are going to be like the days of heaven on earth. And you are confident in yourself. And I tell you, at the end of the year, you just have built another Tower of Babel. That's all. If God does not mercifully stop you somewhere along the way. I don't want you to waste your days. I don't even want you to waste one day of this new year building that Tower of Babel and thinking that you are going to make your days like the days of heaven upon earth. Wonderful message. Oh, I'm going to make my days like the days of heaven and earth. Upon earth, you'll build a Tower of Babel. Please stop on January the 1st. Don't go beyond that. In Revelation 21, you read about Jerusalem. And this is so different. This is the opposite of Babylon. Jerusalem, Revelation 21:2, and I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, not being built up from earth to heaven, but coming down out of heaven from God, down to earth, made ready as a bride adorned for her husband. Babylon will never be the bride. Babylon is the harlot, we read in Revelation 17, but this is the bride. I want to be in the bride. And the bride doesn't build from earth up to heaven. The bride comes down from heaven down to earth. You see the contrast between Babylon and Jerusalem? Maybe it's a very beautiful picture the Lord gives us. And I hope you'll never forget it all your life. This is man trying to reach up to God. And that's God reaching down to man. How did this Jerusalem get up to heaven to come down from there? That is the question. How do I get up there? Is it by some Tower of Babel I build? No, it isn't. Now turn to Ephesians in chapter 2, and you'll understand. Spiritually speaking, we were all dead. What can a dead man build? Nothing. You were dead. Ephesians 2:1. Why were you dead? Because you walked according to the course of this world. Your perfume was earth, world. That was the perfume that came out of your life. You walked according to the devil's principles. The prince of the power of the air is the devil. You worked according to him. When the devil told you to get angry, you got angry. When the devil told you to get discouraged, you got discouraged. When the devil told you to yell at somebody, you yelled at somebody. When the devil told you to be bitter against someone, you got bitter against someone. When the devil told you to be jealous of someone, and you were jealous of someone. When the devil told you to wish evil for someone, you wished evil for someone. You walked according to the prince of the power of the air. Everything he said, you did. When the devil told you to fight with someone, you fought with someone. That's death. And the same spirit that's now working in all the sons of disobedience in the world. And among them, we also lived once upon a time in the lusts of our flesh, doing what we felt like doing. The Message Bible says, you filled your lungs with unbelief and exhaled disobedience. And you inhaled more unbelief and exhaled disobedience. And you inhaled unbelief and exhaled disobedience. That's how we lived. You allowed the world, which doesn't know the first thing about a heavenly life, to tell you how to live. You allowed the media, the television, the newspapers, and all these things, which don't know how to help you to live a heavenly life, to tell you how to live. And we all did that, all of us doing whatever we felt like doing, and we did it whenever we felt like doing it, then all of us were in the same boat. And then it says, God, who is rich in mercy, because of His great love with which He loved us, even when we were dead in our transgressions, made us alive. That's the first thing He did. From this dead state where we listen to the devil all the time, what can a dead man do to raise himself up? What could Lazarus do to raise himself up? Even Jesus, the Bible never says Jesus raised himself up. God raised him up from the dead. And that's what it says here. God not only raised Jesus from the dead, He raised me up with Christ. Do you know what new birth really is? I mean, there's a lot of counterfeit new birth and people who claim to be born again. They say, Lord Jesus, come into my heart. They think they're born again. Real new birth is a resurrection. A dead man comes alive. And a real new birth is a greater miracle than if you saw a dead man coming out of the grave right now. A really born again experience is greater than that. And that's why I say a lot of people haven't had a genuine born again experience. Has become a little more religious, come to church and read the Bible now. They haven't had a spiritual resurrection that made them alive to the things of God and dead to the things of the world. It's what happened to me when I was born again 47 years ago. All my ambitions for earthly things finished. Now, I found myself in another world. Did that happen to you? If it didn't, it's probably because you never repented. It's probably because you were more interested in going to heaven than in being free from your sin. If you're more interested in going into heaven than in being free from your sinful life, you won't have a deep experience of the Lord. Jesus didn't come to take people to heaven. You know that? You shall call His name Jesus because He will save His people not from hell, but He'll save His people from their sins. And the trouble with a lot of people in the world today is they want to be saved from hell. That's why they don't have a proper born-again experience. They want to be saved from hell and they live 100% for the world. These fellows are not born again. They haven't even first realized they are dead. The Holy Spirit comes and does something in us and it's a resurrection. But because I still have my flesh, which is pulling me down. I'm tempted. But something has happened in me. Not just to take me to church on Sunday morning and to read the Bible, but something that's made my mind interested in the things of heaven now. And that to me is a million times more important than going to a Sunday meeting or a Friday meeting or even reading the Bible. That my mind is now lifted up to look at things from God's standpoint. Everything changes. You know how when you walk on this earth, buildings look huge, even a little car looks so big. You get up into the skies in an aeroplane and that huge skyscraper is like a little toy building. And the cars are like little toy cars. The things of earth become strangely dim and small. That's a mark of that God's raised you up. And it says here, God raised us up and seated us with Christ in the heavenly places in Him. That means just like Jesus rose up and ascended and sat down in heaven, spiritually something like that happened to me. I can't explain it, but something like that happened. So, I'm trying to answer this question. How did this Jerusalem get up to heaven to come down from there? In Babylon, they tried to work their way up and they never succeeded. God put an end to it. But here are fellows who said, Lord, I can never go up. I'm a dead man. Where can I raise myself up? Leave alone raise myself up, but go to heaven. I'm not going to try the old Babylonian way of struggling. And the Lord says, will you let me do it? Will you let me do it? Take you a dead person, resurrect you spiritually, and not only resurrect you spiritually, but no longer leave you on the earth, but in your spirit, take you right up to where I am, says Jesus, to be in me, then you'll be in heaven, in your spirit, even when your body is on earth. You know, a Christian is really supposed to live like this. His body is on earth. I mean, we all know that. Our feet are on the earth, but our spirit has already been lift, not only resurrected from the dead, but lifted up to heaven. Now, in an unbeliever, that spirit is dead. But me, it's not only made alive, but lifted up to heaven. And now, I look at everything on earth from this heavenly position. Think if you were, I mean to use our imagination, think if you were physically seated with Jesus in heaven today. Actually, physically, we're not sitting here, but supposing we're sitting in heaven today and looking down on this planet earth, rotating on its own axis and going around the earth, and I'm looking down and seeing the world full of grumbling, complaining, miserable people, afraid of this and afraid of that and worried about this and worried about that. And here I am in heaven and inhaling the atmosphere of heaven and filled with the perfume of heaven. And I look down on the earth, this planet earth. What a different way I look at it. People fighting for property and hitting each other and yelling at each other, getting angry about little things and telling lies and all that. I say, boy, thank God Jesus pulled me out of all that. Lifted me up. I couldn't do it. For years I tried this Babylonian method of building a Tower of Babel. Never got here, but one day I said, Lord, you do it for me. He lifted me up and seated me in the heavenly places. And one day when the saints of God, who have all been resurrected and who have ascended to heaven like this, are complete, from heaven they will come down to earth to rule the earth. And Jesus comes back and establishes the new heavens and earth. You'll see this beautiful bride of people who were heavenly minded when they were on earth. You and I are called to be that. And the secret of heaven is, if in one sentence, there are many, many things we could say about heaven, for our days to be like the days of heaven on earth. But the main secret of heaven is that everything is centered in God. Everything is centered in God. That's not because God is some type of person who loves himself. It's for the salvation of people. You know, the salvation of every planet is to go around the sun. If a planet decides, hey, I've had enough of going around the sun, I want everybody to go around me, there'll be collisions in the solar system. You know, for many years, for thousands of years, people believed that the sun went around the earth. It looked like that. Every day it looked like that. I believe God has allowed it to look like that to teach us, don't believe what your eyes see. For thousands of years, people believed that the sun goes around the earth. You know that the earth is rotating on its own axis? You know what the speed is? This earth on which we are standing right now, this building, and this city of Bangalore is actually rotating on its own axis. And you know what the speed is? At the equator, it's about 1,600 kilometers per hour. And that is about, how much is that? About at least 25 kilometers a minute. 25 kilometers a minute. It's rotating. I mean, when you move up to, well, Bangalore is about 13 degrees north, it's a little slower, maybe 20 kilometers a minute. But do you feel the earth moving under you at the speed of 20 kilometers a minute? I don't feel anything. To teach you, don't even believe what you feel. It's wrong. It's actually happening under your feet, but you don't even feel it. You think the sun is going around the earth? Don't you believe what you see? Don't you believe what you feel? Men lived for thousands of years believing what they saw, and they were wrong. Men lived for thousands of years believing what they feel. Oh, the earth's not rotating. They were wrong. Till one day, people discovered, hey, the earth is not the center of the solar system. The earth is rotating, even though it looks as if it's absolutely still. The reason we don't feel it is because we are rotating along with it. So, it's like that. When people felt that the earth was the center of the solar system, all their physics calculations were wrong. Because he hadn't got it right. Anyway, a lot of their physics calculations were wrong because he hadn't got the center of the solar system right. Once they got the center of the solar system right, a lot of their unanswered questions fell into place. Oh, now we know the answer. We had the wrong center all along. That's the thing. The earth is full of people who are man-centered. Everything's centered around man. The whole earth, when you think of a perfume called earth, you spray it on people. You don't have to spray it, it just comes out of them. It's earth-centered, man-centered. When you go to heaven, nothing is man-centered, nothing is angel-centered, nothing is even heaven-centered. It's God-centered. It's not golden streets-centered. Or large mansions centered. No! It's God-centered. The person of God. Not the mansions and the streets of gold and the tears wiped away and no more sickness. It's not no more sickness-centered or no more death-centered. No! It is God-centered. And the wonderful thing is, even though I can't live a life on earth without any more sickness or any more death, I can live a life on earth where I'm God-centered. I can't have streets of gold on earth. I can't have mansions like heavenly mansions on earth. But there's one thing about heaven I can have even when I'm on earth. Not the no more sickness, no more death, no more pain, but being God-centered. That's the most important part of heaven I can have right now. And it's not only the worldly people. Please listen carefully, my dear brothers and sisters. There's a preaching of the gospel today. A lot of it which is man-centered. Man-centered. And it sounds so good. We got to bless people. We got to help people. And when you see the need around you, certainly you feel you got to help them. I agree. When you see people, for example, in the United States of America 200-300 years ago, there were slaves who were treated so badly. And when you see that, your conscience is aroused as a Christian. And you can fight it. Well, you should fight it if you're called to do it. That's another thing. But there were slaves in Jesus' time. He never fought the system. There was a Roman centurion once who came to Jesus and said, "My slave is lying sick at home. Will you heal him?" A slave. Those people had slaves. Slaves mean no salary, no change of job. You're bought, you're my slave, you live in my home forever. And Jesus didn't tell the Roman centurion, "Release that slave." He just healed him and let him continue as a slave. The Apostle Paul, writing to a Christian elder brother, Philemon, who had a slave called Onesimus, sends him back and says, he's still a slave, but accept him as a brother. In the meetings, which was in Philemon's home, it would be brother Philemon and brother Onesimus. They'd pray together, fellowship together. Once the meeting was over and everybody went to their home, it would be, "Sir, same home." Why didn't Paul carry out a crusade against this slavery? He knew the only worthwhile life he could live on earth was to do the will of God on earth as it is done in heaven. That is, to do that specific task that God called him to do. That's what people do in heaven. They don't do what they feel is right. They do what God tells them to do. The angels in heaven don't look around the earth and say, "Hey Lord, there are a lot of things to do. Just leave me alone. Let me go and do this and do this." You know, people say, "I must do something for God before I'm..." You know, the angels don't go around doing something for God. There'll be confusion in heaven. There'll be confusion on earth. If all the angels with all their good hearts came, tried to do, help people here, there and everywhere. No. In heaven, they wait on God. This world doesn't know that way. A man-centered gospel doesn't preach that way. A man-centered gospel promotes Martha. She's doing something. The disciples are hungry. Let's do something. Let's make some chapatis. Let's make some rice. The disciples are hungry. No time to wait on the Lord. Let's do this. Let's do this. Let's make some curry quickly. The Lord is hungry. His disciples are hungry. It sounds so nice, right? And if you don't know God, you'll be impressed with that type of gospel. But one who knows God and who knows the scriptures, he's not swayed by that. Many, many Christians through the years have tried to sway me to that type of gospel. They haven't succeeded because I know God and I know my Bible. And I trust in the Lord with all my heart and I do not lean to my own understanding. And therefore, because I acknowledge Him in all my ways, He directs my paths in such a way that when I come to the end of my life, I will not have a regret that I spent my life preaching a man-centered gospel, making people feel nice and do good and help them. It's for the worldly people. They'll all appreciate me. If I preach that type of thing, I'll get a Nobel Prize perhaps. Do you think anybody would have given Jesus, the Prince of Peace, a Nobel Peace Prize? His one whipping people out of the temple would have been enough to rule him out of the Nobel Peace Prize. And then his calling Pharisees, "Vipers, and you fellows, how will you escape the damnation of hell?" would be enough to say, "Not this guy." The entire Nobel committee would rule him out. But today, Christians have become more gentle in a human way. Get honor. Okay, I tell you, they're going to have a lot of regret when Christ comes again. and they see what is the result of this type of life and this type of gospel, not only they went astray themselves, but they led so many people astray. We are to bring the atmosphere of heaven to this earth. The atmosphere of heaven to earth. Thy will be done on earth as it is done in heaven. The angels wait. Lord, what will you have me to do? The Lord says, Gabriel, go and do this. Michael, go and do that. They do it immediately. It's amazing. Jesus lived like that, you know. I want to show you a verse in John chapter 5. If there was ever any man who walked on this earth, listen, please listen carefully. If ever there was a man who walked on this earth, who could have done whatever he felt was right, and it would have been good, it was Jesus. Because there was no sin in him. Our minds are warped by sin. Tremendously. Our whole personalities have been made crooked and twisted by sin. It's not been straightened out yet. It's like a metal ruler that's been melted and twisted, and you try to draw a straight line with that ruler and it's all crooked. We try to straighten it, but it's not like that perfectly straight ruler. It's not straight. You think it is straight, but it's all crooked. Maybe it's not as crooked as somebody else's crooked ruler, but it's crooked. But there was one man who walked on the earth whose ruler was absolutely straight, whose mind was absolutely straight, his personality was absolutely straight. He could have drawn a straight line on his own, but he didn't do it. Boy, what an example for me. That's why he prayed so much. Because it's not just a question of being righteous. Those who are righteous need not please God, because without faith, it is impossible to please God. In heaven, they live by this part of faith. Faith has got a number of things. The opposite of faith can be sight. Of course, there you have sight and you don't have that need of that type of faith. But there's another aspect of faith, and that is helpless dependence upon God. Total confidence in God. That is in heaven. The angels have total confidence in God and no confidence in themselves. That part of faith they have. And the angels have total dependence upon God, no dependence on themselves or their own wisdom. That part of faith they have. So that part of faith we are going to have even in heaven. And Jesus lived by that part of faith. Lord, my Father, even though my ruler is straight, I won't draw any line I like. You tell me where to draw a line. And it says in John chapter 5, listen to this. If I were to paraphrase his words in verse 19. The Son cannot independently do a single thing. This is Message Bible. I'm telling you this straight. The Son cannot independently do a single thing. The world is full of people who independently do a lot of things. The world is full of Christians who independently do a lot of things. And that's why the atmosphere of earth comes out of them. The perfume of earth comes out of them. Maybe you can't smell it, because one man who's stinking with perspiration cannot smell another fellow's stink. Right? So if you're doing things independently yourself, you can't smell that independence in that other Christian. But if you have learned the way Jesus walked, which is, I can do nothing of myself unless I only do what I see the Father doing. That means the Father prompts me and I do it. And Jesus showed us how we are to live. That's why when Martha, with all her man-centered activity, came to Jesus and said, Lord, don't you bother, this sister of mine is just sitting here, Mary, doing nothing, not helping me. Jesus said, Martha, you're worried about a lot of things. You're distracted with a lot of things. All your human activities are a waste of time. Mary has chosen that good part, which will not be taken away from her. She listens. Dear brothers and sisters, spend this year listening. If you want to have days of heaven upon earth, A lot of confusion comes into Christian work and into your home because you do things without listening. We must develop the habit of listening. I'm not saying consciously. Sometimes we do it consciously. But I believe listening should be like breathing. How many of you have been conscious from the time you woke up this morning that you have been breathing? Can you take a deep breath now? Now you're conscious of it. But you were doing it all the time. You were even doing it when you were asleep. Were you conscious of it? You'd never be able to sleep if you have to take each breath consciously. Thank God it happens automatically without our being conscious of it. You can develop a life where you can be listening to the Lord like that, where you're not even conscious of it. You're listening. But when you're being sick, like people with asthma and wheezing, and they have to do some deep breathing exercises to expand their lungs. The doctors will say, get up every morning and take deep breaths for half an hour. Like we say, get up every morning and spend a little time with God, listening to Him for half an hour. What's that? It's deep breathing exercises for people whose lungs have shrunk so much they can hardly do one thing and they're out of breath. Spiritually, a lot of Christians are like that. But once you've started taking deep breathing exercises, gradually your lungs begin to function the way they should, and listening to God becomes normal. You're listening all the time, just like you're breathing all the time. You're not conscious of it. But you know how you've noticed that when a sudden emergency comes, something like called adrenaline gets pumped into our system and we get bold and strong. And God, when there's a sudden emergency, we suddenly hear God saying something as to what we are to do, and our hearts are calm. God will give you that. That's how it was with Jesus. He would face sudden emergencies and God would tell him, still that storm. Rebuke Satan here. But he was listening. He was constantly listening. And the Father loves the Son, verse 20, and shows him everything that he's doing. And this is how Jesus lived. Now, it says, I do nothing on my own initiative. That's what he says later on. I don't do anything on my own initiative. I don't initiate things. I wait on God. Martha initiated things in the kitchen. Mary didn't. She waited like the angels in heaven and did what the Lord told her to do. I want to say that that is the first principle of the kingdom of heaven. And that's why you've heard me say, don't speak everything that comes to your mouth. See what Jesus said about His own speech in John 14. If there was one man on earth who when he spoke would be like a straight line, it was Jesus. When we speak, it's this crooked line that we draw. We think it is straight because it's more straight than some other fellow's crooked line. But it's crooked. But Jesus, He never sinned. His ruler was absolutely straight. But even then, He never spoke what He felt like speaking. John 14, He says, in the middle of verse 10, amazing words. The words that I'm telling you, I'm not speaking them on my own initiative. I thought of saying something, but the Father told me, don't say it. I didn't say it. It wasn't evil. No. Jesus never wanted to say anything evil. Maybe He wanted to say something good. The Father said no. Or not now. You know how you can hinder God's work by doing something good? Have you ever thought of that? With our human ideas, it's what I call a soulish life. If you don't understand soulish, I'll give you an example. Soulish love. You know the story of the prodigal son? How he was in a far country and he was starving? And supposing, just imagine that far country was next to your house. And this prodigal son was living in a little hut next to your house. And he was starving. And you keep feeding him. What would have happened? Tell me. Can you know the rest of the story? He'd never have gone back to his father's house. He'd have lived next door to you in the far country forever. And when God is disciplining a man, it's very easy for a foolish Christian to go and give him comfort when he needs a rebuke. And it preserves him in his sin. We don't love people enough to rebuke them. Because we're soulish. We must be nice. The world says, be nice, be positive. Jesus never said these things. He loved people too much. He didn't want to be positive, positive, positive and send people to hell. He loved them so much that He rebuked them strongly. He didn't say, oh, that's all right. That's a little cancer. It doesn't matter. He said, what do you mean it doesn't matter? Come here, let me cut it open and get rid of it from your life. Cut and blood and all that. Get rid of the cancer. It's painful, but the person's healed. Not like this type of positive message. Oh, that's okay. It's a little tuberculosis. It's all right. A little leprosy. Only AIDS. Don't worry. It's okay. Positive, positive. Jesus wasn't like that. He loved people too much. He loved people too much. Have you ever heard me call anybody a generation of vipers? You know why? Because I don't love people enough. I limit what I say. Because I can say more only if I love people more. The Lord's told me that. You can rebuke people only to the extent to which you love them. If you're willing to die for them, give up your life and shed your blood for that fellow, then you can call him a generation of vipers. If you're not willing to do that, just keep your mouth shut and say only that much. A lot of people want to imitate Jesus in His words, but not in His dying for the other people. Why could He rebuke the Pharisees with such strong words? Because He was willing to die for them. How many people are you willing to die for? How many of your enemies are you willing to die for? No, none of them? Then don't tell them anything. Just leave them alone. Let Jesus speak to them. He died for them. We cannot rebuke if we do not love. Jesus, John 14:10, I don't speak on my own initiative. What the Father tells me, I speak. This is the life of faith when it says we live by faith with no confidence in ourselves. Lord, do you want me to say that? You see, that's a life of tremendous strain. Always asking? No. Supposing I have to tell you from now on, you've got to never stop breathing, okay? Zach, you mean I never stop breathing from now on? What a life of strain. Is it a life of strain? It's a life of strain if you stop breathing. How many of you think it's a strain to breathe normally? You know, it's because we are not used to that type of life, we think it's a strain. And the devil keeps saying, oh, that's a life of strain. It isn't. Listening to Father and living that type of life where you're prompted by the Father can become normal for you, but it takes time because that's not the way we've lived. We will forget many days. Supposing you find a barbarian in the jungle and he comes to Bangalore. He's 40 years old and now you're teaching him to brush his teeth every day. Okay? Do you think he'll remember every day? Tell me. Or you tell him you've got to brush in the morning and at night. I'd like to find out how many days he does that without failing. You have to call him up. Hey, did you brush your teeth? Forgot. The last 5 days I forgot. Okay. You keep reminding and reminding. A day will come, if he's faithful, where you don't have to call him up. He starts doing it. And children are like that. That's how we train children. That's how we train children to go to the toilets. It becomes normal to do the right thing. But it takes time. And we have not lived like that for many years. It will take a little time, but it can come. A life of dependence where the Lord lifts us up to heaven and we become a heavenly people. And then, wherever we go, the perfume of heaven, the restfulness of heaven characterizes our lives. God is eternally at rest, no matter what happens. Listen to how Jesus described things are going to be on the earth in the last days. In Luke's Gospel chapter 21, Luke 21, it says, this is a great verse. You know the tsunami was predicted by Jesus? Did you know that? Okay, here it is. Luke 21:25, the middle of that verse, on earth there'll be panic because of the roaring of the sea and the mighty waves. There'll be panic on earth when they see these huge waves coming and the sea roaring and men fainting from fear. It seems, as it says here in the Message Bible, as if all hell has broken loose. And everything shaking and men begin to get into a panic. And at that time, then, they'll see the Son of Man in a few more days coming in a cloud with power and great glory. So when you hear about these tsunamis and the earthquakes, and men getting into a panic and all types of things happening, straighten up. Verse 28. Lift up your heads. For your Lord is coming. That's what I'm doing. That's what I'm doing. Jesus is coming. I have a hope. You know how you read a detective story and 3-4 people, you don't know who's the one who committed that crime. And it's all suspense, 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 suspense. If you want to get rid of the suspense, just turn to the last page and read. Oh, that's the fellow. Okay, now let me read the rest of the book. I want to tell you, I've read the last page of the book. And I know who's the criminal. And I know where he's going to end up, in the lake of fire. And though right now, if the story is going on, I'm just about in page 357 or something like that. And it looks as though the devil is working and killing and this, that and the other. But I've read the end of the book. That's why I'm not in a panic. I've read the last page. Have you? That's why I'm at rest. Why is God at rest? Because it says He knows the end from the beginning. Okay, let me use an example. Think of some situations in your life which ended in a very good way. Maybe a birth of a child or something like that, where the doctors scared you, this, that, other thing may happen, the other thing may happen. Now when you look back over it, are you in a panic right now? It's all over. Now think if you knew that, while you were hearing all these things from the doctors, wouldn't you have the same rest that you have right now? But unfortunately, we can't see the future. But we can see the future concerning certain things, concerning the devil. Yeah, that's why my heart is at rest. God can see the end from the beginning. That's why He's never in a panic. He knows how the whole thing is going to end. And if we can have faith that this God is your Father, is our Father. And He's got it all in control. That's the only thing that will bring rest to our hearts. In the coming days, it's going to be worse on the earth. Bombs, terrorists, all types of things. And our hearts can be at rest if we can be lifted up to the heavenlies. You know, if you could look down from heaven right now, all the panic with tsunamis and terrorists and bombs and all that, you think anybody in heaven is disturbed? You think any angel is biting his fingers and saying, I don't know what's going to happen next over there? Not at all. The angels don't know the future. You go to an angel and say, what's going to happen here in Bangalore next week? Is that going to be a bomb or some terrorist strike? Things are getting tense. Gabriel says, I don't know. God hasn't shown me the future. Then how are you so much at rest? Because he says, I know God is in control. He's the blessed controller of the universe. And I'll tell you something, dear brothers. That's what it means to be centered in God. I told you about this man-centered gospel that is being preached today. Man's life must be made more comfortable. Teach him primarily how to become a little wealthier, how to get more money, because then his life will be more comfortable. I agree. If you have more money, your life will be more comfortable, outwardly. But a lot of these people who make a lot of money and drive fancy cars and all that, there are a lot of preachers that you see on television and all, they don't have victory over sin. That's why they never speak about overcoming anger or overcoming bitterness or overcoming the love of money. You think anybody loves money in heaven? Is it possible to live on earth as Jesus lived? 1 John 2:6, he who says he's a Christian must live as Jesus lived. And the devil says, impossible. And there are a lot of Christians who say, yes, Satan, you're right. Impossible. But there are a few Christians, like Joshua and Caleb, who say, no. If God said it in 1 John 2:6, it must be possible. So don't be fooled by the man-centered gospel that you hear over television or in books and most of the popular books nowadays in Christian bookshops are how you can live a better life on this earth. It's all centered in you. How you can be better and you can live more comfortable on earth. But a God-centered gospel, God came down from heaven to lift you up. Your life can glorify God. You were created on earth to glorify Him, not to have a comfortable life. I mean, if comfortable life was what God wanted for us, then I tell you, God failed miserably when it came to the Apostle Paul. The godliest man of his time, he had such a miserable life on earth. But look what he accomplished for God on earth. Look how his character was developed through all the trials he went through. We need to see that the secret of heaven is to be God-centered. Let me turn last of all to Matthew chapter 5, and listen to the first word in the Sermon on the Mount. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Heaven belongs to those who have a sense of their own need. What's a poor man? A poor man is one who is constantly in need. A beggar comes to your gate one morning and he says, where's the 10 rupees I gave you yesterday? You ask him. He says, sir, I spent it on food yesterday. I've got nothing. Okay, here's another 10 rupees. Tomorrow morning he's back again. Hey, listen, where's the money I gave you yesterday? It's over. A beggar is one who is constantly in need. That's the meaning of poor. Poor in spirit means constantly in need. Lord, heaven belongs to such people. May God make us like that.